most want to restrict are the ones who aren't going to be subject to it. What is the big social benefit to be gained from the registration?
I'm sorry for you, really.
Here I am. I'm in the position of trying to be a spokesman for this, and I'm not sure I can be because, frankly, just off the record, personally, I'm opposed to the whole idea. But from a professional standpoint, we're attempting to do what the commission has decided is a policy matter. They want done, and
if Roger's right on the Fifth Amendment point, all that anybody would have to do would be to let the 180 days go by.
They could still be prosecuted for not having the possession.
They could be prosecuted for selling, but if what he says, see, Section 2 says no person shall purchase or otherwise acquire possession of a long gun unless he has a valid identification card. Well,
okay.
Then you come to Section 4, and it says that anybody who owns a rifle, when this act goes into effect, has to get an ID card within 180 days. Well, so my question was, on the 181st day, if I have a gun, which I had when the act went into effect, am I committing a crime?
Yes. Even under the Supreme Court decision, under the draft evasion thing, you would be after the passage of 180 days, you'd be committing a crime at least for 2 or 3 years, whatever the statute of limitations is on the type of crime. Because if they said that this is a year after the passage of the act, you might not be able to be charged on that day, but if you did come within that Section 1 here, then you would have owned the gun back 6 months before within the... No.
Well, but Frank, wait a minute. Section 2 and 3, we say that no person shall purchase and so forth, purchase or sell or otherwise acquire or transfer, and we say violation of this section is misdemeanor, or whatever it is, grade A or whatever. Same in 3. We don't have that in 4. So if you don't obtain your ID card within 180 days, what are they going to do with you?
Either way, though, failure to register is an element, because either crime, either it is the failure to register itself, which clearly is a Fifth Amendment violation, or it isn't possession that's illegal according to this, it's possession having failed to register that's illegal. So either crime, an element of that crime, one of the material elements, is failure to register. So
I'm
you're stuck
sure it
right
says that.
In the middle of Fifth Amendment.
I'm not sure it says that.
Well, what would be the elements of the crime then?
Well, there's no penalty provision in Section 4. Or no description that Section 4 is the violation of Section 4 will be deemed a crime.
But it is, it's just a proviso giving them 180 days after the effective date to license or register existing guns and giving them newcomers.
And if they don't do it, nothing happens to them.
Well, my thought was that, and when my rough draft on this, I originally had a penalty section in here, and I thought, well, that the main purpose of it was to provide some guidelines in the statute for individuals who already possessed firearms, and that the individual would be, who didn't comply would be picked up under one of the other two sections, two or three, but that may not be the case. But I don't think putting a penalty section in here is in section 4 is going to solve our problem.
Well, take a guy that on the 181st day walks down the street,
okay,
and carrying his rifle, and you arrest him. Say, look here, you're under arrest. You've got a didn't comply with this statute. Assuming for the moment we've got a penalty section in section, penalty provision in section 4, I don't see anything wrong with that under the Fifth Amendment.
Well, what?
With that arrest?
No.
It'd be the arrest that you'd make when he comes in after the 181st day and himself registers, and that you base the prosecution upon that. That acquisition
well,
of information.
Well, but of course you're saying that he would be admitting that he had not registered within the 180 days. That he, in other words, he'd been possession of a firearm without the valid permit for, say, let's say it's the 190th day. So for 10 days he's been committing a crime, and he's coming in and admitting that he was committing a crime by registering. So what we need is some provision that under this, as long as this is only the provisos, I'm giving a guy 180 days grace for it, that has one when it goes into effect and 90 days when he moves into the state. We need something that to say that on a, if the guy, in other words, goes in and registers on the 190th day, he has not committed any crime. If he is found in possession without registering on the 190th day, or even say the 540th day, he has committed a crime. But if he can come in other words, if he can beat the police to registering without being arrested for being in possession without the permit, that he's free.
Well, the problem there, of course, you're going to have is you're going to have a great many unregistered guns. In other words, you wouldn't necessarily have to register a gun as long as you don't get caught in possession without your identification.
Well,
you would have a defense.
As a practical matter, that's the only time you're ever going to pick these people up anyway.
Not if you were caught.
You're not going to, there's going to be no way of knowing. There's going to be no way of knowing unless a police officer catches somebody in the act of using a gun and he doesn't have a permit.
Right.
You're not going to, otherwise, There's no way in the world you're going to know about who's complying with the law and who isn't. And I don't know how you can get to it.
What are you going to just conduct regular house-to-house searches?
Sure. File an affidavit and get a warrant for
well,
a search?
Well, of course, that was one of the outlandish things that was in House Bill 1546.
I know that John Jones over here has a rifle and he hasn't registered it.
Now, this 1968 Supreme Court case,
I'm a bounty for informers,
held that a proper claim of the constitutional privilege against self-incrimination provides a full defense to prosecutions either for failure to register a firearm or for possession of an unregistered firearm. Because they were construing the federal statute.
That's the Marchetti case.
Haynes.
Haynes. Read that again, please.
Well, the Fifth Amendment provides a full defense to prosecutions either for failure to register a firearm when it should have been registered, or for possession of an unregistered firearm. But they're talking there about what in Don's draft is people within prohibited classes. They're talking about, which in your case would be ex-convicts, minors, people with a background of mental illness, alcoholism, this sort of thing. This case does not apply to your example of a person who is not within a prohibited category, but just doesn't register his gun.
This, yeah.
But the people within these prohibited categories cannot register without incriminating themselves.
Well, but a person in a prohibited capacity, however, if he's found in possession of the gun, he doesn't get off the hook simply because had he registered, he would have had a good defense under Fifth Amendment to a prosecution based upon his registration.
Well, he would in some cases. The ex-convict wouldn't, but the alcoholic would, because there's nothing in the other part of our firearms article that prevents an alcoholic from owning or possessing
the
firearm.
The alcoholic then would have no defense, because he would not be incriminating himself by going in and registering. So he has no defense. The mental incompetent has no Fifth Amendment defense. It's only the ex-felon with concealable weapons, that if an ex-felon walked in and tried to register his gun, his handgun, the state police ought to say, well, my God, you just got out of the pen, and arrest him for being an ex-felon in possession. And so he might have a Fifth Amendment defense to being in possession of a handgun without registering it. But the alcoholic, he's not committing any crime by coming in and saying, I want to register.
Sure he is, if he's prohibited from possessing it.
No, he's only prohibited from possessing it if he doesn't have a permit, and we're not going to give a permit to that type of person.
And so if by coming in and applying for a permit,
mm-hmm.
it turns out that he is in this class, that really doesn't incriminate him, because he's attempting to comply with the
like they
say
with marijuana, that you can't require a guy with to bring in his ounce of marijuana and get a license for it, or pay the tax on it, because then the person who was, rather than putting the tax on it and taking the tax money for him, would simply arrest him for being in possession of a narcotic drug illegally.
Is anybody going to be inconvenienced besides the law-abiding citizens? Boy, read that language out of that case again. That doesn't say that if the ex-con who has not registered his gun is caught, that he cannot be prosecuted for ex-con in possession.
No, they're only talking about these particular firearms registration statutes.
All right.
He would be guilty of being an ex-con in possession.
But in the alcoholic case, though, you've got a different problem, don't you? You get into that, like this California case, it says prosecuting a man for being a drug addict is prosecuting for status rather than for voluntary conduct, that kind of thing. Whereas your ex-con has been...
Well, you'd have the same thing with a minor in possession of intoxicating liquor. I mean, the same argument would apply, because it's because of his status that he has no control over, that he has not yet reached the age of 21, and prosecuting him for being in possession of intoxicating liquor.
Is different than the crime. No, this California case I'm talking about was the one where they prosecuted strictly for being an addict, not for being in possession.
You're talking about the Johnson case, and but the United States Supreme Court decided otherwise, and what is it, Powell versus Texas? But that's on grounds of cruel and human.
What you're saying, Roger, is that if this draft prohibits felons and drunks and whoever, three or four classes, from obtaining a license or a permit or an ID card, do you draw a distinction between the Fifth Amendment application to ex-cons and to alcoholics in that context?
Yes, I think Frank's correct on that.
I don't understand why.
Well, because the ex-felon, if he came in and said, I want to register this pistol, he would be saying, I own a pistol. And he would therefore be incriminating himself under the ex-felon in possession statute.
Are we going to retain the ex-felon in possession statute?
Right, because that's entirely different.
Well, if we pass this, why do you retain the ex-felon in possession statute?
Well, it seems to me if there's a whole different kind of consideration there, but maybe not.
I would think there might be a different penalty.
Give the DA some discretion.
No, because under the Fifth Amendment, you wouldn't have any discretion. But an alcoholic, and you're not prosecuting him because of his status of being an alcoholic, you're prosecuting him because he doesn't have a permit to have a gun.
Well,
it's not a crime to be an alcoholic, or it's not a crime to be mentally ill. It's only a crime to be in that category and have a an unregistered.
Well, one reason I felt that the other statute would be retained was that I contemplated that all of these penalty sections would be
misdemeanors. Yeah, and the ex-felon in possession is not, and should not.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion.
And you're concerned about the. You're concerned about the possession of certain kinds of weapons by certain kinds of people, but not for the same reasons that some of the same reasons, but not all of the same reasons that you're concerned with in trying to find out where the weapons are and who has them. And
well, I don't understand that, Don. If you say we presently say we don't want felons to have concealable weapons, and if we find him with a concealable weapon on his person, in his possession, we're gonna convict him. Try to.
And he gets a pretty stiff jolt too.
Okay.
I forget what this
five years. Non-probatable. Now, although there's nothing in there that says you can't send him to penitentiary for a day. Interestingly enough. Now, if you're going to say here that you can't own or possess guns if you fall within one of the prohibited classes because of the danger to society, why do you have to say it twice? Presumably.
Well, he would have a defense to this, to a violation of this article.
Why? I don't understand that.
Because he can't be required to register his gun.
It's because, though, he would be violating the ex-con statute.
Have the ex-con statute, then you don't run into the Fifth Amendment problem. Right. Except, as has been mentioned here, if you put a penalty in Section 4 and the guy came in on the 184th day and signed up and you prosecuted him on the basis of that signing up, he would have a Fifth Amendment defense. Right? Because
he came into the state and didn't register within the time period?
Let's say he's already in the state. I'm here and I've got a rifle. And on the 184th day, I walk in and I register it. And you prosecute me for possessing a firearm on the 181st day without a permit, assuming a penalty section in Section 4. I assume, from what you said, that
I would think
you couldn't prosecute me, at least based upon what I told you.
Right. Good. I could see another problem here is you're going to have the difficulty of proving how long someone has had a firearm. You're going to have to take his word for it.
Well, sure, everybody's going to say, if you had a questionnaire that said, how long have you owned this weapon, he's going to say 175 days or something, you know. If he's got any smarts, it'll, you know. But
well, after the 180 days, this is one of these types of statutes that will remain in the Act for 180 days and then in subsequent sessions would be taken out because it then no longer becomes applicable. This is a giving a gratis to the people who own them at the time the Act comes into effective date. It gives them 180 days to take care of this registration or licensing. And so once the Act has been in effect for a year, this could go, because it would then no longer have any effect.
Yeah, at least the first part.
Yeah, the 90 days on the people moving into the state is a good deal.
Yeah. Well, certainly my intent, and I don't think the intent under House Bill 1546 was to make that a crime, because there are penalty sections in here. It didn't apply to Section 4.
No.
Well, but not only that, we've been talking about one thing wrong. This isn't 180 days, how long have you owned the gun? This is 180 days from when the bill becomes effective.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's the cutoff mm-hmm. date. Now, how the guy could have owned the gun for 5 days, but be beyond the 180 days of effectiveness of the act, and he's still in the...
Well, yeah,
it
right.
won't under the way this act is written, that once the 180 days passes, that then a person will get the permit, his individual permit, before he even gets the gun. I mean, because it can't be sold to him unless he has the permit.
Right. The new purchases we've got covered well, and or adequately, I should say, but if you want to conform with the commission's directives that everybody that has a gun has a license, you've got to pick up the ones that are in circulation now some way. And
what did they do in Massachusetts and New Jersey? Maybe we transfer this to John Burns.
I'm not
actually what we should do probably is make certain that the effective date of this portion doesn't come into being until long enough to give the people an opportunity to get them registered before then. Get their permit that's required or whatever.
Yeah, but even if you said this act doesn't become effective until January 1, 1972, and just flatly said it's a crime to possess a gun without a permit, it still isn't going to solve the Fifth Amendment problem, as I understand it. If the guy on the 2nd of January wanders in and registers the gun to get the permit, prosecute him on that information, there's still a Fifth Amendment yeah. problem.
And the guy that comes in to register the gun or get his permit because he owns a gun, regardless of whether he's late in doing it or not, isn't the type of person that you really want to prosecute. Let's say Dave is a little bit late coming in registering his gun, so he comes in on the 2nd of January, or he comes in on the 181st date, brings all his guns in, wants to register him and get his permit. He's really not the type of person you want to prosecute, because he is attempting to comply with the law, he's just a little bit late. It's really the same, you might say, as with dog licenses. You gotta get a dog license, say, on the 1st of January or something. But after March 15th, they start attacking penalties onto your license fee,
just like
rather than prosecuting you for having had the dog the last couple months without a license.
Well, this Massachusetts Act, which is really a very strict law, doesn't have any grace period in it. At least not, doesn't. Maybe at one time it did, but...
They do have a provision here on page 110 that I think that's probably designed for. It says, because it gives police authority to stop anyone off their own premises and ask for their identification card. If they don't have one, they have the right to seize all firearms. But then that person, if he comes back within 30 days with a valid identification card, the weapons will be returned to him.
If what you want to do really is encourage people to step forward and announce themselves, why couldn't you put your 180-day provision in and also say, for anyone who steps forward and voluntarily registers his gun after the 180 days, that shall be a complete defense unless prosecution was commenced prior to registration. That would take care of it. That just says if you come in and volunteer before you get caught, you know, if you wait to get caught, you've had it. If you come in and volunteer before you get caught, what's wrong with writing into the law the fact that that saves you?
Because the person, I mean, that's not the person that you want to get. The person who comes in, he comes in late, but he comes in to...
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Saving him by simply saying it that way in the statute, that it shall not apply for 180 days, and that further, for anyone who steps forward voluntarily registers before a prosecution is commenced, that shall constitute a defense up until that time. Why? What would be so complicated about that? And that would encourage people to step forward and register if they fell in the limbo period.
Yeah, that's what it should be.
That covers exactly the situation you're talking about.
What do you think of that, Don? Other than your general distaste for the entire country.
Why don't we take a 5-minute break?
Yeah, okay.
Drunk at the time.
Yeah, now we're getting into the section now where I was hoping the state police would be represented here today, because we're putting some pretty heavy burdens on that department. Section 5, the department shall issue upon application a permit or identification card to any person who is not ineligible. Here is the permissiveness of the thing. Not ineligible under Section 6 of this article. Sub 2, the department shall issue the permit or identification card within 10 days after it receives the application of a resident of the state, or within 15 days after it receives the application of a non-resident. A permit shall be valid for a period of 90 days from the date of issuance and may be renewed by the department for good cause for an additional 90 days. The reason I did that was because really what we were trying to do here is pick up the registration of the gun. That's what we're concerned with. And it seemed to me that there wasn't any reason to have these things outstanding for any longer than that. If a person's going to buy a gun, then...
Well, I'm not sure I understand that.
Yeah.
This is... the permit refers to the handgun.
Yes. Right.
Well, if I own a handgun, and let's say a .22 caliber pistol to shoot jackrabbits with, that means I got to renew my permit every 90 days.
No, that wasn't, I didn't mean that. It meant for the purposes of purchasing a gun, that your permit that you obtain would allow you then to go and within the 90 days and buy a gun. Once you've obtained your permit and if you already have the gun, then you've skipped the purchasing stage and you have the weapon. You have the weapon, it's been registered, and you also then have your ID card, which is good permanently. So you're covered both places, seems to me. You don't need an indefinite...
An identification card is good permanently?
Yeah, the identification card would be good until permanently, or unless it was revoked or suspended.
The permit then is strictly for purposes of the sale transaction itself, the purchase.
Well, primarily, although we have required that if you own a handgun before this becomes effective, you then have to obtain your permit. But the only reason you need to obtain the permit, if you already have the gun, is for the purposes of registration of the handgun, you see. Now, there may be another way of doing that. I thought, well, you might be able to do that through the identification card. But...
Well, we're going to require a... Now, does a person who borrows a gun have to get both a permit and a identification card?
Borrows a handgun?
Yeah,
apparently so.
Yeah. It's a handgun, he'd have to have both. Now, I'll tell you, let me tell you this. What I was trying to do, now I asked the commission at the meeting, I said, now, do you want a draft that does both of these things, or do you want two separate drafts? And I was told, we want the draft to do both. So what I was trying to do was to set up in here two separate standards side by side, one for handguns and one for firearms, that are the long guns, so that if the commission decides to retrench here a little bit and scrap the rifle and shotgun provisions, we've still got a procedure for handling the handguns. So I was trying purposely not to combine the two in the same subsections, so that one could be junked without losing the other. I mean, that's really what I was trying to do. I might as well level it.
Yeah. But Frank, as to handguns, under this article, there will be no, as to people that do not have a permit and identification card, there'll be no loaning of handguns under this article, because if I wanted to borrow your gun this week for a hunting trip, your handgun, and I didn't have this permit, it would take at least 10 days before I could get the means where I could even borrow your gun, or that you could even legally, you could give it to me, because you can't give that handgun to someone who doesn't have a permit.
We've also overlooked the fascinating ramifications of the inchoate crimes of solicitation and conspiracy. Why don't you come out to the gun range with me and we'll do some target shooting? Well, I don't have a permit. Well, I'll let you shoot my gun a few times. Why don't we go hunting together? Well, I don't have a permit. Well,
what about the husband who loans his gun to his wife? Are you going to say that?
It wouldn't be permitted under this.
You've got the kind of things that do happen regularly that would just...
But if the object is to screen out people that should not be permitted to use...
Why is there number one on the list?
There's no point in allowing anyone to use one that has not gone through, that's complied with this procedure, whether it's a wife or a friend.
I think part of our problem...
Wife or a friend. I like the differentiation, Roger.
That's important.
Or some other name.
Except for the language that Don wants to use here and call it a permit rather than a registration of the gun. But really what we say is that a person cannot buy, borrow, or steal either a handgun or a long gun without a... identification card, a licensing of himself. And then what we want is that every handgun will be registered and every transfer recorded. But rather than saying that the handgun must be registered, you say you've got to get a permit for it.
That's right.
But you see, once it's registered, if you use the term register, once it's been registered, recorded, then that registration is good until it's transferred
to some other person, right?
And then it has to be re-registered.
Right.
But that's what
and that person
it, that's what makes it kind of seem kind of funny. You say that from reading it, a permit shall be valid for a period of 90 days. Well, that's because we're calling it a permit to purchase rather than a registration of the gun.
Yeah, and of course it seems to me that's a legitimate objective, is to control the purchases of new weapons and new handguns. And what I was trying to do was do both, control that and through these other sections require a person who already owned the handgun, to comply too, for the purposes of picking up the registration of the weapon. That's all. So the 90 days isn't going to affect him because he's not going to have 90 days to buy it. He already owns it. But he's still going to have to, in order to continue to possess it, get the permit, which accomplishes the registration of the weapon.
Why not use the word registration instead of permit if that's what's really, you know, the goal and what's meant, or is that politically an unpopular word?
It has some elements of
popularity. It would seem to fit the intent more if you just, you know, called it what it was and took off on that train of thought on the thing.
Yeah. Well, all I did was take the approach that House Bill 1546 took and expanded on the same idea. And they use the term permit. But permit, they call the firearms purchase permit. But I was trying to separate the two for the reason I've already said, plus the fact that I didn't want to impose the same kind of burden on the guy that has a shotgun or a rifle that you're going to impose upon the guy with a handgun. And for the purposes of the paperwork, we could use the same form, and the way I handled that was I set out what has to be set forth in the application form for the ID card and or for the purchase permit for the handgun, and then I said, and then in addition, for the permit you need your fingerprints and a description of the weapon. I wasn't going to require fingerprints of a guy who just wants to buy a rifle. And I was trying to make it less onerous for the hunter and the farmer and the guy that just has a long gun. And really I wasn't trying to necessarily be devious about it, but maybe it makes it too complicated, and maybe it isn't wise to call it one thing when it's really something else. I don't know.
Have you considered on section 2, the 10 days, 15 day thing as a practical matter? Sometimes it takes longer than that to get an FBI check back on the fingerprints. As a practical matter, I think you're going to need more time than that, because many times law enforcement does need longer than that time to get an NCIC check back.
Well, I know it's going to end, but you got to have some standards in there, a reasonable time, granted, if they don't send it out in 10 days, you know, there's really not much you can do about it, I suppose. But this is pretty standard time limit that appeared in these other statutes.
This sub 3 certainly bothers me, because it's hard for me to get this concept that you get a permit and then it expires at the end of 90 days.
Well, maybe we could say it shall be valid for the purposes of purchasing or something like that.
Well, what about saying for a period of 90 days, it shall be valid until we're talking about a handgun, purchased or otherwise obtained, or for a period of 90 days. In other words, you're saying that what we're saying here really is that you get a permit to buy a gun, a handgun, but that doesn't really register the gun. If you come in and get a permit, you say I go in and say I want a permit to buy a pistol, and they say, well, what pistol are you going to buy? I don't know what pistol I'm going to buy. I'm going to buy a pistol. I'm going to shop around, and I've got to have this permit to purchase first. So, on your permit to purchase, it's not going to have the registration effect at all.
Yes, it is, because I require it in here.
See that?
It's not a permit in blank. It's a permit to purchase a specific gun.
You're going to have to know your gun in advance.
You've got to shop first, go get the permit later, go back and get the gun.
That's right.
Is the way it works.
Okay, then it's...
See, I wasn't trying to make it easy to buy a handgun.
I don't get the impression you're trying to make anything easy here.
Okay, so it's...
B. Because, you see, as we go on over and say what has to be contained in Section 7, I set forth what the applications for the permits or identification cards contain. And, you see, and then under 3, an application for either a permit or an identification card shall contain A, the name, residence, citizenship, place of business, age, date of birth, occupation, sex, and physical description of the applicant, and B, a statement by the applicant that he is not ineligible to obtain a permit or identification card because of any of the disabilities set forth in Section 6 of this article, the applicant's signature. And then under 4, I go on to say, an application for a permit shall contain the following additional information. A, the applicant's fingerprints, and B, a description of the handgun, including the name and address of the manufacturer's identification or serial number, letters or marks, and any other identifying features of the weapon. See? So when he goes in to buy a gun, he's got to know what gun he's going to buy.
Well, then if he gets, if I want to go into Kaplan's and buy a .22 pistol, I go through this business here, giving them the serial number and so on. Then a year later, I want to sell the pistol to Roger. Then I'd have to go back and get another permit to sell it, and he'd have to get a permit to buy it.
No, you don't have to get a permit to sell it. He's got to have one to buy it from you, though. But you don't have to have it. But you can't sell it to him unless he has a permit.
Oh, well, wait a minute. I saw them.
You sign a contract and you're conspiring.
Some notice that the person who has
a gun, I get you.
To notify that he has sold or otherwise disposed of it.
Section 12.
Well, we have the Firearms Transfer Register picks that up, Frank.
Okay.
Which really just kind of expands what we have in the existing law. That's under Section 13.
If I recall correctly,
statistically more involved in violent situations, or
And this, and of course, this President's Commission on Violence, their recommendation was that this is the area that not only the states, I mean, they recommended a federal law covering handguns, and because these are the kinds of weapons most often associated with violent crime.
I wonder if it.
We are also going to require under Section 3. That you've got to get this permit to purchase for ammunition.
Yeah.
So that means that every time that the person wants to buy a few more shells, he's got to get this permit.
Well, no.
Because, and the reason why is because we're using it a permit to purchase, we're not registering the gun.
Yeah. No, that's not right. He's not. He can buy ammunition with. No.
That's it. Every 90 days, you'd have to get
every
a new permit.
Every 90 days,
to buy
because it's not a gun registration, it's a permit to purchase. He's got to get a new permit to purchase. You see, you might want to say that he can't buy ammunition unless he's got a registered handgun.
Well, that's really what it
is. That's what you want to
that's
say.
That's what we want to do.
But this isn't what
then
you're doing. You're going
to
make the guy, because you call it a permit to purchase, he's got to go in and get a permit to buy 3 boxes of
22 shells.
Yeah.
And he's got to pay $3 to buy 75 cents worth of ammunition.
But the permit to purchase, you see, was a was a permit, as we've defined the term, you see. Permit means a handgun purchase permit. It's not an ammunition purchase permit. So,
well, then you'd have to
what we're trying to do is to say that you can't buy an ammunition for a handgun unless you have a handgun purchase permit, which in effect has registered the handgun, you see.
Yeah, but it's only valid for 90 days, so after the 90 days you no longer have a handgun purchase permit.
Well, it's only valid for the purposes of buying a handgun, though.
Well, Don, how do you tell when somebody buys a box of 22 long rifle shells whether it's for a pistol or a rifle?
I don't know.
There won't be. There's no way to tell.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. If you're going to say if the permit purpose is for the purchase of a handgun and it's valid for 90 days, in other words, you have to exercise it within 90 days or go through the whole thing over again. What about the word handgun or ammunition in sub A of section 3 sub 1? That would require
As far as the ammunition goes, all we're concerned about is the fact that the person has an identification card. Right?
No,
I
don't agree with that.
Not if he buys handgun ammunition.
Because that's going to be one of the ways to pick up guys who haven't registered their handguns when they come in to buy ammunition.
Yeah, but like you say, I don't know what they're... But there's 22s, there's a 32 caliber, there's 45. But except for 22s, you can't tell whether it's for pistols. But what about, are there... what about other timing shells? You see, I know so much about guns and
I think it's only the 22 ammunition that you couldn't distinguish its intended use. I don't know of any other handgun ammunition to be used in a long gun.
That's why we don't really want to say that the permit is only good for 90 days.
Well,
because it's a fact.
It just seems to me that there must have been 100 bills introduced in Congress.
They're all bunged out.
Various provisions. And I would say that, gosh, in these other legislatures, there must have been schemes proposed that. It just seems like every way we turn, we can't get there from there.
Well,
it's the nature of the beast. I don't know.
No, I don't think that Dave says. I don't think this 90-day thing is an insurmountable problem by any means. Because, I mean, I think we can cure that easy enough. But I don't think you want to give a guy a permit to purchase a handgun that's going to be good indefinitely if what we're mainly concerned about is handguns. I mean, and I gather that this is the area that. Where, I mean, this was the first motion that was passed by the commission was handguns.
Won't that cure itself, Don, by virtue of the fact that you required him to list the serial number of the specific gun he intends to purchase? If he doesn't buy it within 90 days, the dealer's going to sell it to somebody else anyway, because by definition he wants to move his merchandise.
Yeah, but he has already got the... You see, because we call it a permit to purchase rather than a registration and go at it from that standpoint... So the deal falls through. The guy isn't able to come up with the money the next payday that he thought. So the dealer goes ahead and sells it to somebody else.
That permit's not good for any other gun anyway, so
all
at
right.
That point it's become...
But on record, they still have him on record with his permit to purchase. The gun is in effect, you might say, as long as we're using this method of registering, the gun is in effect registered to him whether he buys it or not.
Yeah, it could be.
You see, because he got the permit to purchase that gun. In other words, that you could come up with five people all having that same gun registered to them.
Well,
what if I go down and buy a gun and handgun and register it and so on, and I can't pay for it, and he repossesses it?
What you need is for the permit to purchase to have a perforated deal that the seller or transferor then in turn sends in when the sale or transaction is actually, or gift or whatever it is actually made. You see?
Yeah.
Then they'd have on file, this pistol now is registered to this individual, rather than that he just got a permit.
What is it, Don, what does a dealer have to do nowadays? If I go in and buy a pistol today from Kaplan's, does anybody end up knowing about it?
Yeah.
You ought to see the forms you have to fill out.
Who?
Yeah.
The sheriff or the governor or somebody?
The police.
A copy goes to the chief of police, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't the chief of police, Roger, the one?
So they know that I came in and bought...
I crossed out that language and added new language, so...
They know that I came in and bought a pistol bearing serial number XYZ.
The sheriff.
Huh?
Oh, yeah, if you buy a new handgun now from a dealer...
From a dealer.
From a dealer, you're going to be... It's going to be picked up. Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes in, and then the chief, they're not to deliver it for... 3 days if they're not...
But that's just for the purposes of checking you out.
So
that really doesn't register the gun.
Yeah, the police can make a quick check to see if you're an ex-felon or something and let them know that they shouldn't sell the gun to you.
Well...
But that doesn't register the gun. See, that's a problem. That's just to alert the local law enforcement people so they can...
There's no real reason why it couldn't be used.
Yeah.
So that there would be a central registry, and the registry would know that Jim Burns has 22 pistol XYZ.
Right. No, that's
and that any time later that I sell it or somebody buys it, why you got to do the same kind of a thing and send it in.
Right. Yeah. I don't think that the sale of a new gun or even the sale of a used gun is any problem. But that doesn't get to the question of registration of the guns that are already in the possession of people now.
Well, but if they pass this, are they going to abolish the statute that currently exists that prescribes the rigmarole you have to go through with those forms in triplicate when you buy it?
No, I still got it in here.
What information do you get out of the one process that simply isn't duplicated in the other?
Well, it's still presently in there because Don feels that the whole ball of wax here may not pass.
I feel what?
Right.
But, I mean, there is no reason for it. If you have to get a permit to purchase, this gives them 10 days to check you out and that type of thing, so there's no need for that other.
Well, the other just is added inconvenience for no gain, isn't it? At that point?
Well, I mean, it seems to me, though, if we're going to try to control handguns, that I don't think it's a very good argument to say that we're making it too hard on people. I mean, if that's our objective, is to control handguns, and then the fact that you have to go through two steps instead of one to buy a handgun, I don't think is a legitimate objection.
Well, wait, is it a legitimate affirmative argument for it to say that inconvenience is a redeeming merit in and of itself?
Well, no, I don't think it's a redeeming merit, but I think it gives some additional controls. For one thing, this certification procedure that's established in the statute now doesn't require any fingerprints.
Well, but if you pass this that does require fingerprints, what more do you gain at that point by not getting rid of the second step where they go through a procedure where they simply take down the same information that's already on file minus some that's already on file?
Don, let me ask you this. Does the identification card have to have on it the guns, either hand or long guns that the person has? I mean, there's no... This is a... identification card that you have that allows you to own a firearm.
Same as a driver's license.
Yeah,
allows
and
you
it
drive
doesn't
a car.
State on it
what car.
Gun. Uh-huh. Okay.
Your handgun permit would say what gun. the handgun permit, but the ID card wouldn't.
Yeah, so there is
a...
Well, you say in section 11, a person shall not be restricted as to the number of handguns he may purchase if he applies for and obtains permits as provided in this article, but only one handgun shall be purchased or delivered on each permit. However, only a single permit shall be required under section 4 for all handguns acquired by a person before the effective date, provided each handgun is separately identified.
In other words, that if you...
Anybody getting a new one, getting one that's new to him after the act, goes into effect, has to have a separate permit for each handgun.
Right. In other words, because that's really a permit to purchase. But rather than making a guy who already owns five pistols get five permits to purchase, really all they're doing is registering them so you can register them all at once.
Yeah, that was the reason I wrote that kind of language in there. I didn't think that what you're trying to do is register the gun, and there's no reason to make this guy. But I think it's a different consideration when he's going out to buy new weapons. I mean, a guy going out to buy six guns, I think if you're going to try to control handguns, you ought to know about it. That
if you say that the statute that already exists covers what you want to cover on purchase, what you're really trying to do is bring in the flock that's outstanding already, why not legislate simply as to that and keep on the books what you've got?
Well, what's on the books now, it doesn't cover it all, Jim. I mean, it covers some of it, but the whole purpose of this register of transfers is to alert local law enforcement people that Joe Doe has applied, is going to buy a handgun, and then it gives them time to check him out and tell that dealer, don't sell him that gun.
Yeah. See, it's only the dealer that is really
present,
involved in this deal at the present time.
Well,
because he has to do this. He's the only one that's committing a crime for not doing it. The person buying it. So it's something that he has to do, and he can't deliver the gun for 3 days, so the local law enforcement can notify him, don't sell that gun to him.
Right, but
then after that's done, after the gun's delivered, the stuff is thrown away.
Okay, let's reverse the argument then. Assume you pass the new, which allows the checkout in advance rather than the notice after the fact. Why retain the dealer transaction records that you go through if you've already gotten all that information plugged into the system by this procedure you went through 15 days or 10 days ahead of the purchase? What more do you accomplish for the added effort? What benefit?
The identification card is the same for a handgun or long. So there's no difference in any information that he's got to supply. In there, or is it? You got to get the fingerprint. Or is
you got. You have to get the fingerprint and the description of the weapon for the handgun permit.
That's for the permit. That's not for the identification.
Right.
So really, where we're really getting all balled up. That really what we want is registration, and we're trying to get at it through a purchase to permit to purchase, which.
Well, Frank, I don't necessarily agree with that, because whether you call it registration or permit, the idea is to ascertain the location of identifiable handguns, who they're in, and make it possible, at least theoretically, that you don't get them unless you get a license or a permit or whatever you want to call it, and we won't give certain classes licenses.
otherwise they've got to get them behind the barn.
Well, and getting to your question too, Jim, now, this dealer's register, I felt that because I had slugged into there an additional requirement that at the time of the purchase from a dealer, that that dealer had to obtain and register on this, on his records, the purchaser's identification number, you know, from his ID card or weapons permit. And that would go in, and this would also then end up eventually in the state police, which gives you an added check on the purchase of new handguns. In other words, if a permit number shows up on there that doesn't check out with the individual or something like that, that hopefully this could be discovered at the time that... That's assuming anybody's going to read this stuff after it's sent in.
Yeah, but why wouldn't that same thing be accomplished with more efficiency by Frank's suggestion? In other words, if you've got this triplicate when you fill out for your permit, and one of the backing sheets is green, that's the copy the state police keep at the point that they issue the permit to go out and purchase it. Then the dealer takes the perforated tab off the pink copy with the permit number and stuff at the time that the gun is delivered, and he sends that back into the state police. Then they staple the green copy to the pink copy in their files, and whenever they've got a green and pink, then they've got their, you know, their red light as to actual delivery. And that takes care of the problem that Frank was discussing on the, you know, what about the deal that falls through and you got three permits outstanding to purchase a particular serial number gun, and the police say, well, now which one actually got it?
Which twin has the
They would know by the redelivery of the pink slip through the dealer which one